It's called soccer.
It's called football.
Soccer.
Football.
Domino's best deal ever lets you get any pizza, including stuffed crust, with any toppings for $9.99.
Okay, we can agree on that.
Yeah, fully.
So, pineapple?
Don't ruin it.
Get any pizza, including stuffed crust, with any toppings for $9.99. Finally, something everyone can get behind.
And if the refs disagree, that's between them and Domino's. Which means the only thing left to fight over is who's ordering.
Domino's.
Prices higher for some locations. Excludes XL and specialty pizzas. Select this offer from 6:15 to 7:26. Online only. Size availability varies by crust type. Max 7 toppings. 6 for pan and New York style crust. Minimum purchase required for delivery. Prices, participation, delivery area, and charges may vary.
It is Ryan Seacrest here. There was a recent social media trend which consisted of flying on a plane with no music, no movies, no entertainment. But a better trend would be going to ChumbaCasino.com. It's like having a mini social casino in your pocket. Chumba Casino has over 100 online casino-style games, all absolutely free. It's the most fun you can have online and on a plane. So grab your free welcome bonus now at ChumbaCasino.com. Sponsored by Chumba Casino.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 21 plus. Terms and conditions apply.
From NBI Studios, this is Truth and Justice, a crowdsourced investigation in real time. I'm Bob Ruff.
Ahoy, friends. Thank you for tuning in to Truth and Justice. You are listening to the Friday follow-up for Season 18, Episode 24. This week, we heard Bob's conversation with Heather Lewis, the executive director of the Reuniting Family Bail Fund. Not only was this episode extremely interesting, it was also incredibly educational on so many fronts. Today, the gang is all here, and Bob, Janet, and I will do our best to get through all your listener questions. But before we get into that, do we have any housekeeping?
So it's kind of the same housekeeping as last week. Anybody that's watching this live might notice that I am, in fact, at home in my studio, which I realized right before we recorded that I never told Zach that I was, in fact, not traveling this week.
Yep.
I texted Zach before the show started and was like, are you coming? He's like, why would I come? You're in New York. And I was like,
whoops.
Wait a minute.
Whoops.
No, I'm not.
Well,
yeah, that's on me.
We figured it out.
But that trip, I have a text message that says it is confirmed for next week. So next week, I don't know. We will do a follow-up. I don't know exactly when or how or what time or how any of that stuff's going to work. So I know JV's got a crazy busy schedule right now too. But somehow or another, I will find time to stream from my hotel room on, I'm hoping, for Tuesday night. So just be aware that if you're somebody who likes to watch the follow-ups live, much I know a lot of you do, that it may not be at the usual time because I have no idea. I haven't got my travel itinerary or any of that stuff yet. So as far as any other housekeeping, I don't think we have anything else going on other than that possible schedule jumbled next week. So we can kind of get right into it. Before we get into this week's episode, I know, Janet, you had, before you got sick last week, you had told me the day before that you had done, you had listened to all of season 3 of Guilt and all of season 6 of Guilt, and you were raring to go to talk about it, and then you couldn't be on the show.
Yeah.
So I just wanted, if there's anything you don't want to add to last week's conversation, you're welcome to do that.
Oh, thank you. But without Ryan, absolutely not. You're not going to be able to discuss any of this stuff. You guys don't know the show. So I can't be like, I can't just put it out into the ether. Like, I can't ask any questions or anything because you won't know the answer. So. I'm really bummed I missed it. I mean, that the season that he's working on, this last season, season 6, was such an enormous undertaking. I know you guys talked about it a little bit, but the idea of juggling like 3 different, very, very different, but possibly related cases, I was kind of gobsmacked that he took that on, and then he did it really well. And yeah, it's cool. It was really cool to hear you guys catch up with each other. And yeah, it would be cool if there was an opportunity at some point to have like some sort of a Guilt meetup if he's ever in the States, have a Truth and Justice
meetup.
Yeah.
I'm curious because you've completely listened to season 6, right? You listened to the whole thing?
Yeah.
So where I'm at, I keep having to pause it because I'm interviewing other people. So I've had to do, you know, other background stuff. But where I'm at, he's shifted into the second case and he's a little ways into the second case. Mm-hmm. I haven't got, so I'm assuming then he then makes another shift into the third case.
Mm-hmm.
And at the end, does it all like come back together
end? He sort of has to like spend time on something, but then maybe something will come up that in real time that will relate to a different one of the other people. And so my memory of it is that he had to juggle a little bit just because, you know, there would be somebody that would come forward because he's publishing episodes and then people are coming forward about mm-hmm. the other two cases. And then I made it even more confusing for myself because I had been following along with season six. But then because of all of the activity that was going on with season three, which he mentions in the course of season six, I was like, I guess I need to go back and check out season three because I think somehow I missed that one. And then I had like four cases floating in my head. But it's really crazy. It's been really interesting to see how much impact he has had both in Australia and New Zealand and the work that he's doing. It's very cool.
Please tell me that by the end of season six, the production quality starts to waver a little bit because it infuriates me.
Yeah.
It infuriates me.
I'm so sorry,
me
but no. Sounds really good.
He can't possibly keep that up.
Real jerk move, Bob. Real jerk
move.
In real time.
Yeah.
You did it. Real jerk move in real time.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. So he pulls it off all the way through.
Yeah, he does.
Damn it.
Yeah. So
damn
sorry.
It.
Yeah. Even the ones where he's like, I have to apologize for the audio on this one. It's still like, this is fine.
That's like, pretty good.
You're fine.
It's pretty
yeah.
good, actually.
Yeah.
Yeah. He's an amazing dude. He really is. He's just one of those guys I mentioned last week. He's just one of those guys that whenever I talk to him or interview him, I'm like, he's somebody that I wish like he lived here. I would hang out. We would just be buddies. We would go climbing mountains together.
Oh, for sure. I could totally see you guys like if there was any reason and possibility ever to team up and like try to work on something together, I think you guys would be such a natural fit for sure.
Yeah, it would be really cool. All right. And so with that, let's move on to Heather Lewis. This is a little different one. And these are the interviews that I'm really loving this season because I just get to, you know, I love having the flexibility. We're like, huh. And we have that sentiment in some of the comments and questions that people ask where it's like, how do we not know about this? It was like this got, I don't remember how I got connected with her, but I was like, huh, I didn't know that existed. Well, let me talk to her and figure this and learn about this. And it was just such a cool episode discussion, and Heather is just amazing in all the stuff she does. A lot of the stuff I didn't know about. What did you guys think of Heather in the interview?
I, for one, loved it, and I loved how educational it felt. I mean, there was instead of so much pushing her brand, which I mean, she's talking about what they do, but she put a lot of information out on what people should be doing, on the fact that the bail stuff that I didn't know that. I didn't know you could just pay your bail. You know what I mean? Like, it seems like you had to go through somebody. That's little things like that I thought were really incredible. And I love what she's doing. And I loved having Heather on the podcast because even though she's clearly a professional, she's the executive director, she felt like a real person. The way she mm-hmm. spoke, she felt like, and I love that. I love when people have that fire and have that. Oh, I loved it.
She told me right before we started, she's like, I'll try not to cuss. I'm like, you don't have to try not to. Oh. Like, you know,
there was a moment, I 40 minutes in or something where she kind of let loose. And I was like, oh, I like that woman right there. That's awesome.
Yeah. Yeah. She's awesome.
Yeah. There was the moment that I thought of when you guys were just saying that was actually potentially a very dark moment, but she made me laugh and like brought that kind of lightness into it when she was talking about what you guys were talking about, like including the case that you served on the jury for, Bob, where someone's a driver mm-hmm. or they're just there, but they become an accessory and then they're the ones who plead out or who they're the ones who don't plead out. The person who's actually guilty pleads out. And then the person who had nothing to do with it except being in the wrong place at the wrong time. Arguably, some people are more a part of things. I understand that. But anyway, when she was saying, like, say I was in the car with you and you saw your ex and you were really mad and you screamed. She did like a little, nose. I was like, and that made me laugh.
That was awesome.
It's interesting. So that it's all this stuff snowballs, right? So that part of the conversation, and it's funny, you're going to hear in Sunday's episode, me confuse that conversation with the case that we're talking about.
Hmm.
But I had somebody that had reached out to me. Well, I'll just tell you guys, it's Amy from the Case by Case YouTube channel about a case she was working on. that kind of involves this type of thing, right? Kind of Jennifer Jeffley-esque, right? Where it's, yeah, it's, you know, they were convicted of being involved and they ended up getting this massive sentence because even though, the, you know, in this particular case, they don't believe she actually was involved, but because they thought she was just connected to it somehow. But it was like the conversation with Heather, and we think is like, oh, you know, we should talk more about that. Let me circle back to this person who had reached out to me. And so I got her on the podcast. I just interviewed her yesterday. You guys will hear about it. You'll hear it on Sunday. But it just, yeah, it just, I, like I said, for me, it's selfish for me, but I'm just like, I just love being able to, like, I'm trying to educate myself. I'm trying to learn stuff. I'm trying to, like, things I'm interested in. We just keep, like, one thing just keeps rolling into the next.
For sure.
And I'm trying to mix up the another interview I'm recording this week, which you guys are hearing next week, is completely off topic from this stuff. It's not anything. It's not a content creator, not our usual type of thing. So I'm trying to just really, you know, educate and just give useful information.
Yeah. No, I thought it was great. And you know, there were some things that, again, it is like, sometimes it can feel so overwhelming the way all of these different variables can wildly change one person's individual experience, even if certain things about various cases are very similar, just to see how disparate the law enforcement yeah. community responds, the way the criminal, quote unquote, justice system responds, the courts, the judges, all like the DA and the public defender, all of those things feeling in some ways like a roll of the dice, and it can feel so overwhelming. So having an organization that is looking to ground things some way, any way that they can offer up potentially an equal or a more equal opportunity or a way to sort of try to, sadly, like, not put your finger on the scale, but almost like push someone else's finger off of it.
Yeah.
To set things back to a baseline is so inspiring. And, you know, and listening to it and thinking about the work that she's doing. And this is such a side note, but it's always interesting to hear how people in their own professions, in their environments, in their comfort zones, the way terminology is used. Like, I remember, you know, this is an example that I won't get into because I don't want to upset anybody, but, you know, Dr. Shiloh and Dr. Scott are really good at kind of knowing what the current terms are for certain types of mental illness or like choices mm-hmm. that people make and self-harm and stuff like that. And hearing her say, you know, I didn't have a family member in this situation, and then my son caught a case. And that just really stood out to me. I just thought about that because, you know, it has a different flavor to it than saying, you know, my uncle was arrested, my so-and-so committed a crime, like to sort of relieve some of the immediate judgment that is projected on naturally. Because, again, we are taught that if you are arrested and, you know, you have to make bail, there's probably a really, really good reason that, you know, that bail is set in place and you're guilty and you're a criminal and you can just rot in jail while you wait for your trial because, of course, you're guilty. So I think neutralizing some of that language and stuff is also like just a very, I'm sure to people who are, you know, strongly in favor of very, very harsh punishments and stuff like that, they just roll their eyes when they hear something like that. But I think our audience gets it. And, you know, I respond, that's just a small thing. But again, it just, you know, continuing to humanize people and really hearing her talk about people with substance use challenges and stuff like that. And you just realize like life is very challenging, even for people who are in the quote unquote middle class or, you know, who are just trying to like get along with their neighbors right now. And so when we have these conversations with people who are really sacrificing their time and efforts to try to help very specific people that in many cases, the stressed out people in a neighborhood next door are just like, I can't be bothered. Like, I can't think about those people right now. I'm stressed. My life is this. This is so far away from my experience. I can't think about it. And so I felt very inspired to just hear somebody who's like, no, this is really important. And we need more members of communities everywhere to step up, you know?
The whole idea, the thing that intrigued me most and made me want to talk to Heather was when having her as a guest was pitched to me, the whole idea of this participatory defense. My reaction was, what does that mean?
Yeah.
I have no idea what this is.
Totally.
And I did some research on it prior to talking to her, but I was still not quite grasping it until she came on and we talked about it. But what a huge, you know, A big thing is that if we can do nothing else is to spread awareness through the people, all of you listening, that like the people you know, the people you hang out with, whatever, for people to understand that prior, because there are so many people, they don't know the difference between jail and prison. They don't know the difference between pretrial, post, like it doesn't, like you get arrested, you're in jail, like you did it, right? That's what they think. But if more people just genuinely understand the very basic thing that until your trial, you are an innocent person. You have merely been accused of something, and that's it. And then if you start to, then you start to think about the idea of being detained for months and months on bail and losing your job and losing your income and all these things while you're waiting for the trial. And if you really, and this seems so like elementary, like so basic, but it's like, I feel like most people don't think about this. Like that person has been convicted of nothing. The person you're okay with being locked away until they go to trial, they have not been convicted of anything. Until that trial happens, we don't even know if they did anything wrong. And yet there they sit. So like that, I think, is important to stress. It was kind of unraveling to me as I was talking to her, the advantages of this participatory defense, where you're having your family be involved. And it never really occurred to me till we were in that conversation of how many people end up like taking a plea deal, which is 90, you know, high 90 percentile of cases, having no idea what's actually going on between the defense attorney and the prosecutor. Not that there's even anything nefarious going on, but like, do you know, do they have the discovery? Has the defense attorney reviewed it? Has this thing that the prosecutor is telling the defense attorney, and we use the example of where they're like, listen, we know he was here, so let's make a deal. And in that scenario is a great example, right? So the prosecutor says, look, we got this evidence. Somebody said they saw him at the scene. We know he was at the scene. He's going to get convicted. Let's make a deal. So the defense attorney, trying to do the best they can for their client, is like, all right, they got him dead to rights. Let's make a deal. Then they go back to their client and say, listen, you're facing life. They're offering 15. You need to take the deal. They've got you. They've got you dead to rights. The evidence is overwhelming. Whereas if this, you know, if family and outside people, if you're not in bail, if you're out where you know what's going on, and there's the whole bail reform side of it, right? And the bail funding. But then also just somebody to say, wait a minute, what is this evidence they have? And she used that example of when they're like, well, they know you were there. Like, wait, no, I wasn't. Call so-and-so. I was with him. He can tell you I wasn't there. But it's like, you wonder how many people have taken the, been boxed into a corner and taken those deals because they didn't know what they didn't know.
Yeah.
And it's such a, it kind of seemed like going into the conversation, I'm like, this whole idea of participatory defense was like, man, this is like a really like high level, like it's complicated. I'm struggling to wrap my brain around it. But by the time it was over, it's like, this is very simple.
Mm-hmm.
It's get people participating in your defense to slow it down so you know what's actually going on. And that was huge. Then, of course, all the talk about bail and all that stuff, which a lot, the bail stuff, you know, we've talked a lot about in the past as far as how hard it is to fight your case when you're locked up and you're not out in the free world. But then also those conversations about the things you don't think about, like you're arrested, you're denied bail or can't afford bail, and you spend 6 months, 8 months, 9 months waiting for trial. You go to trial and you're acquitted, you're innocent. Your life is still destroyed.
Oh, for sure.
You know, imagine, you know, I consider myself pretty blessed that, you know, we make a good living, Becky and I, with all of our jobs that we have going on. But like, if I were to get locked up for 9 months and I couldn't work at the school and I couldn't run the podcast and do the PI work and all that stuff, like that would be about enough time for us to lose our house while I'm gone.
Sure.
And then like your consolation prize is up. You were acquitted. The system worked. The system worked. Yeah. Go home.
Most, you know, communities are still going to gossip. There are still going to be people who are like, oh, it's probably technicality. Right. I'm sure he did do it. Like all of that kind of stuff that's going to follow you.
Yeah. And I guess I've always thought about that, but I haven't thought about as much of like that big victory you have, like every once in a while, which doesn't happen too often because a lot of, you know, most cases that go to trial end up in a conviction. But when you go to trial and you fight it and you get acquitted, and there's that big celebration and everybody's like, oh God, everybody's so happy because they were acquitted. It's like, but the cameras aren't going to show you, you know, a week later when they're back home and they've lost their job, they've lost their house, you know, trying to undo all those months and months of damage. It's just the idea of this cash bail is just.
Find the one and save big this summer during Haverty's July 4th sale. Right now, everything is on sale from sofas, sectionals, bedroom furniture, and more. Come find your style and celebrate at Haverty's, online or in Columbus at Polaris.
Hey, it's Ryan Seacrest here, and I have discovered a fun new escape from the daily grind, Chumba Casino. Chumba Casino has hundreds of social casino-style games that's all free to play anytime, anywhere with daily bonuses. So get to ChumbaCasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 21 plus.
Save big on your next project at Menards. Check out our huge selection of Richmond water heaters. Whether it's electric or gas, tank or tankless, Menards has what you need in stock. Ensure that you have hot water for when you need it most with a new Richmond water heater from Menards. Plus, check out our weekly flyer on Menards.com for all the great deals happening now.
Save big money at Menards.
What do you guys think about it? Before I know we do have some questions we're going to get to, but it's one of those things that just very transparently I struggle with because I like everything I'm saying right now leads me to like this shouldn't happen. Like people should be able to wait outside of their home for trial. But then I always think back those weird scenarios where it's like, okay, well, like there's a whole lot of evidence that this person is a psychotic murderer and they're very violent and dangerous. Do I want them out on the street? But I feel like ankle monitors could do a lot of work here. What are your thoughts on bail in general?
I think like there's and Zach, I don't mean to jump in, but I mean I think when it's even something like that goes back to like, well, before you just abolish it altogether, like take a look at where it's who it's really affecting and where it's happening. And, you know, even half measures in many cases, because you start looking at the statistics and you look at, you know, what the offense is, what the purported offense is and what the bail is and who ends up sitting in there. And sometimes it's justified and maybe it's good that, yeah, a bail isn't being met. Maybe. But, you know, if it's just being tossed around, especially involving, you know, smaller, more petty crimes or like substance use that's like personal violation, but you're not necessarily hurting someone else. And then you get stuck in there. Like there's just a logic that doesn't seem like it's being applied up to and including like, okay, so we don't get your like you can't pay your bail. So we'll continue as taxpayers paying for you to be kept inside the jail. Like worse, you know what I mean? Like money is being spent.
Well, and how weird is it that is the deciding factor?
Oh,
so
for
it's
sure.
Like, it's because there's a bunch of, like, to me, I feel like you could draw a line at nonviolent offenses. To me, like, if it's a nonviolent offense, then just they should be out on their own recognizance, I think. Yeah. I feel. Right. If you get into violent offenses, but it's like, there's two things happening. First is, do we feel there's a world where this person is safe to go out and be with the public while they're waiting for their trial? And then they decide yes, right? So it's like the judge has already decided. I think it's safe for them to be gone, to be outside of jail while they're waiting in trial. They can be out with the general public. Then it's like, but only if they have $100,000.
Right. No,
like,
you're
wait,
right.
What?
No, you're right.
You know, it's like when you break it down into those two pieces, it's like either it's
doing?
Okay for them to be out or it's not.
Yes. Absolutely.
How much money they have shouldn't be the deciding factor.
100%.
What do you think, Zach?
So it's I'm really torn on the situation, and I understand where you guys are coming from. But at what point, where do you draw the line? Because you've both said equally, you know, equal parts. Well, if it's not a violent offense, if it's this, we should let him out. And if it's a violent offense, we should keep him in. But at what point, where do we draw the line? What's a violent offense? What is not a violent offense? You pull someone for drunk driving, you let them go. The next night, they drunk driving and kill somebody. You know,
true.
Like. There's so, where do you draw the line? And the monetary thing, I understand the monetary thing sucks. And I'm not for this. I'm playing devil's advocate here right now. The monetary thing sucks. But the reason I believe they do the monetary thing is they have to get you to come back to court, right? People skip bail all the time on lesser charges, on lesser bail. Like, I'm not saying it's right, But I'm saying, like, yeah. That's where the money comes in. Like, they you don't want to lose $1,000. You don't want to lose $200. You know what I mean? But people skip bail on that all the time.
Yeah, like it makes sense to me in that part of it. Like, the reason the bail is set is I need to make the bail high enough that they're definitely going to come back.
Right.
But then you look at it from this other perspective where it's like, but how do we end up in the situation where two people who are accused of identical crimes in identical scenarios that go into and get identical bail, and the deciding factor of this guy gets to go home and wait for trial because he has a lot of money in the bank. This guy has to fight his case from inside the jail because he doesn't have a lot. Like, I get why the amount is there, but it's like when you start applying it to like real people, and that's what I said. That's what I always feel like an ankle monitor can do a lot of work here. Like, if we have the technology to say, okay, we've decided that it's safe for you to go out as long as you come back to court. We're going to strap this thing to your ankle that you can't take off. That's going to show us exactly where you're at all times. And if you tamper with that thing, then you're just going to jail and that's it. Your bail's done. Like, I just feel like that's a better solution. I said, it's a complicated situation because everything you just said, Zach, is true.
Right.
Right. You want to make sure that person comes back to trial. You don't want them to be like, oh, you can go on your own recognizance and they just drive away and you never see them again.
Right.
You know, you want to make sure they're coming back. But at the same time, like, it's the disparity there between, like, once we get to the decision is made and it's like whether or not you get to, and it increases, you know, I don't remember the percentage, but it's a huge percentage difference of successful defense and unsuccessful defense, depending upon whether you made bail or not. So, like, your legal outcome is determined solely based on your financial situation at that point.
Which I totally understand. But at the, I guess the way I continue to look at it is how do you fix it then? Like, because I get the ankle monitor idea. I feel like there is a large hefty sum that comes along with that, right? So does that come back on the taxpayers to pay for that? Or does that come back on the person that has to have this ankle monitor? But then again, it's funding, right? So it's the same thing. You're like, you can get released and you have to have this ankle monitor, but you have to pay X dollars to have this ankle monitor. Well, then you're in the same boat again.
Right. But I'd be curious to see like what the cost differential is between housing and feeding someone in the jail
right
per week compared to what it costs to, you know, whatever the service is for the ankle monitor. I'd be curious what that is, because I believe you're right about that, that I think that when you have an ankle monitor, you get charged for it.
Yeah, like I believe
the defendant has to pay something for that.
Right. And I know, based on people that I know that have had ankle monitors, you know, typically you have to have it set up at your residence. I mean, there's a process to have these ankle monitors. It's a cumbersome process, which I completely am for, but I guess it just comes back to the monetary side of it. If you don't have the money, you can't do it either.
If you don't have the money for your bail, you don't have the money for an ankle monitor.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So I don't know. I am just playing devil's advocate. I am not, I think it sucks. I think it all sucks.
Well, I think it's good to do that because it's a good example of how complex the situation is. And that's why I kind of asked what you guys think about it, because it's not, I don't think it's as easy as, because a lot of people are just like, there should be no bail, period.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm like, I can't say that, because I can see scenarios where I think that there should be I can see scenarios where you need something to make sure they're going to come back, or you need them to not be able to go out as Susan said in the chat, you know, a judge can always just say they're a threat. So, you know, so we're not going to issue bail. And that's a different thing to me than that. That's where I don't want to keep repeating myself, but that's where, when I really think too hard about it, it makes my brain hurt, when I'm like, okay, if you issued bail, that means that you believe that they're not a threat. Because you're literally saying you can go out and live in your home.
Right.
While you wait for trial, you're saying they're not a threat, but then if you're poor, you still have to be in the jail.
Right.
And again, back to what I originally said, this person hasn't been proven to have done anything wrong.
Right.
Well,
they've merely been accused.
And also, like, can you afford an attorney who's going to come and argue on your behalf for even just your bail hearing? Right? Like, if you have a lawyer who's like, Your Honor, you know, this is a pillar of the community. This person is who, like, is being paid to make these arguments because you can afford to have that sway. And then the judge listens to that differently than, like, a bail hearing where, like, no one shows up for the defendant. It's just going to be easier to just go, okay, like, I'm going to set your bail super high. Or, yes, I'm setting a bail versus not setting bail. Or I'm not going to set a bail. Just having, you're already in a bind as soon as you're arrested if you're getting a bail hearing because, you know, if you can afford to have someone help you argue that you deserve to get out for any reason, that's different than if you don't have that. It already is different, you know?
Hey, everybody, Bob here. I'm interrupting this ad break to tell you how you can never have to hear another ad and take a huge step towards helping us continue our work all at the same time. As most of you know, I provide all investigative and advocacy services to the people and attorneys that we cover on the show completely free. Over the years, we provided hundreds of thousands of dollars worth of professional investigations to the wrongfully convicted, completely free of charge. And the reason that we're able to do that is in large part thanks to the support of listeners like you. Our Patreon community funds the overwhelming majority of our work, and I want to take this opportunity to ask and encourage you to join the club. The base level membership is just $5 a month. Now, while that's only a cup of coffee's worth out of your account, it makes all the difference in the world to us and the people that we work with. And for your $5 a month, you get a whole list of extra content, exclusive just for patrons. Every week, Janet, Zach, and I do an hour-long live stream just for our patrons. You also get an unedited video version of the Friday follow-up every week, a weekly pregame podcast that drops into your podcast feed. Patrons often get to participate in interviews that we do on the show live days or weeks before the rest of the audience gets to hear them. And of course, the best part, all of our content is completely ad-free for our patrons at the $5 a month level. Patreon really is the only way that we're able to keep doing this work. And it would mean the absolute world to me, Zach, Janet, and Erica if you'd consider joining if you're able to do so. Joining the Patreon community is super easy. Just go to patreon.com/truthandjustice to sign up. Or you can go right to the episode description of this or any episode and just click the link. Thank you from the bottom of our hearts for your support. And now I'll return you to your regularly scheduled ads.
Find the one and save big this summer during Haverty's July 4th sale. Right now, everything is on sale from sofas, sectionals, bedroom furniture, and more. Come find your style and celebrate at Haverty's, online or in Columbus at Polaris.
Tyler Reddick here from 2311 Racing. Another checkered flag for the books. Time to celebrate with Chumba. Jump in at ChumbaCasino.com. Let's Chumba.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. CTNCs 21 plus. Sponsored by Chumba Casino.
Shop the Sherwin-Williams 4th of July sale and get 30% off paints and stains June 26th through July 6th. Whether you're refreshing your interior or exterior, we've got the colors to bring your vision to life. And with delivery, getting everything to your door is easier than ever. Shop online to have it delivered or visit your neighborhood Sherwin-Williams store. Click the banner to learn more. Retail sales only, some exclusions apply. See store for details. Delivery available on qualifying orders.
So the other thing that...
Go ahead, Zach.
The thing that I'm thinking about right now is what, and again, I'm just throwing stuff out there. Don't hate me on this. What are the actual numbers we're looking at? Because we're talking about people that are going to jail, that are receiving bail and haven't gone to trial yet. So they are innocent until proven guilty, which I 100% understand. But how many people go to jail for the crime they did being caught doing it? And then those people receive bail. I have family members that have been caught numerous times and received bail, but they got caught in the commission of the crime.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, maybe they're not a threat and they have to go home to stand trial for this. But you know what I'm saying? Like, what are the numbers we're looking at here? Because I do feel like this is a problem, but is it as significant as a problem numerically as we think it is?
Yeah, well, I don't know that, and Susan's in our chat, and I know she's either written or is in the process of writing a dissertation based on all this, and she's kind of a, she's an expert on the topic, so maybe she might have the answer. I would think, though, that's a very difficult thing to numerate, right? Because I don't think there's a distinction in, you know, if I go through LexisNexis and look through all the case law between, you know, case or say somebody's charged with whatever, petty theft.
Yeah.
You know, they don't differentiate was caught in the act of stealing as opposed to was seen on video as opposed to a witness said did it. Like, I don't think that's differentiated enough to be able to get good statistics of that.
Okay. But that's the things that I think about is like, it is a problem, but is it 2% of the problem? Is it 50% of the problem?
I mean, Susan's comment in the chat, it's a 95% of everyone who is arrested problem.
So that's your answer.
Yeah.
Not to, you know, how many people are caught in the commission of doing a crime. I assume what she's getting at is that for most people, you know, there's probably 5% of cases to where bail is like something that is really necessary, or denial of bail is necessary, that this person is a threat. There's, you know, the overwhelming majority of cases are nonviolent offenses, drug cases. Like, even like you mentioned DUIs as a good example, except for, you know, what happens in DUIs, they get bailed out all the time.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I know many people who have gotten DUIs and they get a bond and they got to come up with,
but
you
that's
know, a
exactly,
couple hundred bucks and they get out.
That's exactly my point, though, is DUI, you're caught in the commission of what you're doing and you get bailed out.
Right. Well, but also there's, so in that regard, you know, one, I was on this is a long story I told years ago, but I was on the jury for somebody who was arrested for a DUI, and, you know, they were caught in the commission, but, you know, when they finally did their like blood alcohol test, they blew like a 0.05. They weren't actually drunk. That was them caught in the act was the officer determining based on sobriety tests that he thought she was drunk.
Okay.
You know, so there's this question there. Also, somebody we all know was arrested for a DUI because he got pulled over and there were beer cans in the back of his truck, and the officer swore he smelled beer and arrested him for, you know, caught him in the act for DUI and beat the case, you know, literally blew zero. And they still, even after the breathalyzer, still charged him.
Okay.
And he had to go through this whole mess of fighting this thing, right? So again, it's always like, where do you draw that? There's a lot of things that like sound good in theory that there's no real way to legislate. Like, I've heard people say with the death penalty, it's like, well, I don't agree with the death penalty unless we know they did it. Well, how do you write that into a law? You know, how do you legislate that says if these things are true, then we know they did it.
Right.
And I think like Texas has like a weird law like that where it's something like, you know, if there's two or more eyewitnesses to the crime.
Oh, don't do that.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah.
Well, and I don't want to, I know I'm probably coming off like I'm defending that. I don't want to.
I'm not defending this at all.
We're just trying to wrap our heads around it. Understand where this is at. Cause I genuinely don't know. I'm trying to understand it the best I can.
Yeah.
It's such a weird thing to me. You know what I mean? Like the idea of like, where do you draw the line? Where is not the line? I don't know. I'm flabbergasted. Well, I'll say that.
And I'm glad if we can move on to questions. I just, the purpose of me asking the question is exactly what we did, because I wanted to have a discussion and kind of demonstrate how complex of an issue it is.
Mm-hmm.
And to me, the best way to do that is to try to noodle it around and try to articulate what you think. Like, it's like, oh, you're like, oh, well, there's this. Oh, wait, there's this problem. And this works. Oh, wait, and except for this circumstance, right? It's complicated.
Yeah.
Right.
Well, let's get into these, because I think most of them are a little more kind of observational, like people who also were interested in this and felt like, why haven't we already heard of this, including Britta, who's like, and I wanted the clarity of, did Heather mean race? Is it Racine? Sorry, Racine? Racine?
Racine, yeah.
Racine, Michigan, or Racine, Wisconsin? Do we know?
I looked it up, and I'm quite certain. I was thinking of Ravenna when she said it, which is, and what I was thinking during the conversation was, Ravenna, Michigan, such a small town. What a weird place to have this hub, because it's a tiny little place. No, I believe she meant Racine, Wisconsin, because I looked up. There is a hub for participatory defense in Racine, Wisconsin. So I think that's what she meant.
Yeah. And Britta also backing up the, like, you know, please, please, if you get called to serve on a jury, please do. Please show up for it and do your civic duty and pay attention and ask questions. And for sure, Kathy also found it really interesting and informative and did not, like many of us, know that you could just pay the bond without a bail bondsman and that it's a different situation, that 10% is different when you're doing it through a bondsman versus doing it directly.
Yeah, that was interesting to me. I wanted to touch on that for a minute because I'm curious, and I'll wait for a second to see if Susan chimes in the chat on this, as it is her area of expertise. But yeah, so the difference is, you know, when you pay the bond, when you pay bail or you pay a bond, you're paying it, and they're holding that money. This is the way it's supposed to work to ensure that you come back to court, and then when you show up to court, you get the money back. And so a bondsman, for those that are, I don't think we've got too deeply into this, you know, they're companies that are like, oh, they set your bail at $10,000. You can come pay us $1,000 and we'll pay the $10,000 for you. But then when you show up to court, they get their $10,000 back and they keep your $1,000. She was saying, and I don't know if this is true everywhere. I think it's different in every jurisdiction, is the only reason I want to touch on it.
Mm-hmm.
That at least in Montgomery County, that the court will say it's you know, a 10% bond, and in Montgomery County, at least, you can just go pay the 10% directly to the court. I don't think that's how it works here in, like, in Berrien County, where Zach and I are. I think it's they set it at $10,000, and then a bondsman still has to pay the full $10,000, but you can pay them 10%. And I'll wait and see if Susan chimes in. But that's my understanding from the little bit of research I was doing on that after, because I was really curious about that too. I think that is dependent upon your jurisdiction.
Okay. Jill says, I love the work Heather and her organization are doing. We need more Heathers in our world. Do we have links to their sites around the country? Sounds like if you head to participatorydefense.org, you can get information about those different chapters, so to speak.
Yeah, they list all the locations on that website for all the different hubs, so you can look for one that's close to you. Like, because that was part when I was looking for Racine in Michigan. There's three hubs. Two of them are in Kalamazoo. I think one is over by Detroit area. But yeah, there's a whole list of every state that has all these different hubs that you can get involved with.
Yeah. And Linda said, I recently retired and would be interested in being a court watcher. I checked the website and didn't see any information regarding that. Please provide contact info. Maybe Susan and Linda can connect via Facebook, because Susan Deitch. Am I saying it right, Deitch? Is it Deitch or is it Deitch? I'm not sure. I'm realizing I've never said your last name out loud, even though for these many, many years I have seen your name and feel I know you well.
Yeah. So as far as being a court watcher through participatory defense, so it's on their website. They do it, and they do it at all the different hubs. From my conversation with Heather, it sounds like there's no like spot where you can click like, I want to sign up to be a court watcher. So you would just find your hub, and then you would just do the contact button there and reach out and be like, hey, I'm interested in volunteering to be a court watcher. And they'll set you up. So there's not like, you're not going to find it, because I went through several different hub sites, at least the ones I was looking at, like a specific place that's for court watching. So the contact information would all depend on where you're at. Find the hub that's closest to you, reach out to them, and say, hey, you know, I would like to be a court watcher. How can I do that? And then they'll set you up.
Cool. Anyway, so yeah, going back to Susan. Susan says, more info than question. I have done observational research in my local jurisdiction for my dissertation, specifically about the pretrial process and how often it is equivalent to punishment before verdict. Here's a little info that may prove relevant to your conversation. I'm very well versed in the academic literature regarding embedded issues such as cash bail for misdemeanors or nonviolent felonies. The bail or jail dilemma is rarely ever, quote, required by state laws for these lesser charges. I can speak to the why of it if interested. The judges can always release someone on their own recognizance for these minor crimes, but they almost never do. It's important to realize that just being present during these court hearings can lead the judges to be more thoughtful about what they do. Take notes and remain silent. And do not be surprised if a bailiff or the judge asks you if you have a case, and to which you would say, no, Your Honor, I'm just observing. They are very much not used to being watched. And I have even had judges say things to excuse their obvious shortcuts while looking directly at me. It's amazing how the mere presence of members of the public can make a difference. I want to comment on that in a second, but Susan says, I'm also a volunteer with our local community bail fund. I would love to help others learn how to find information, how to understand the laws in their area, and how to interpret what they see when observing court. If you want to go observe, dress simply, little or no metal so you can walk easily through the detectors, take a paper and pen, and leave your phone in the car. Most courthouses prohibit electronic devices for everyone except attorneys. I also keep my driver's license in my pocket rather than trying to carry a bag, which will be searched. Ask me anything. Happy to raise awareness. Susan, D-I-E-T-S-C-H, on our Facebook and certainly in our chat right now. Thank you so much, Susan. Yeah, I just, the idea of like just showing up and being present and having that affect how a judge conducts themselves in court is both chilling and also inspiring. Like that shouldn't make a difference, but if something that small can make a difference, by God, we better do it, you know?
Yeah, it's interesting because I've never seen this happen, but I've been in courtrooms for different things for different reasons. And usually it's like an assembly line, right? Like when I was going through, I was evicting somebody from a rental property and I show up and it's like, oh, I thought I had a hearing right now. And turns out it's eviction day and there's 50 people in here that are all here for this reason. And they're just like an assembly line one after the other. And so what I noticed is when there wasn't notably somebody in the room that wasn't involved in a case that was just there to observe how things were being done. Like the judges tend to have this, it's almost an arrogance about them. Like it's my court. I'm going to do what I want. And I shouldn't speak to all the one I was in. Right. In other circumstances where I've been in courts like this, just kind of rude to everyone and talking down to everyone. And just like, you try to ask a question. And it's like, no, next, let's move on. Next one. I don't care. And so when I read that, I kind of had the same reaction as you, Jan. It's like, one is like, that's terrible that should make a difference. But also like, I'm imagining just kind of how human behavior works. Like, I bet it does. I bet it does make a difference if they look up and it's like, oh, well, I have authority over all these people because they all need something from me. Like, you know, landlord tenant, right? The landlord needs me to rule in their favor and the tenant is reliant on me to hopefully keep them in their home. So I can be an asshole to any of them because they all need something from me, to look up and be like, oh, here's someone who doesn't need anything from me. They just want to see what I'm doing.
Mm-hmm.
I could see how that can make someone be like, oh, I guess I better behave myself.
100%. No, that's what I mean. Like, I genuinely got a little bit of a chill when I read it, not because I didn't believe it or anything like that. I just read it because I was like, oh my God, it's such a small act. And yes, it's people taking time out of their days. And, you know, it's not, I don't want to say it's nothing for the person who is doing that. I'm just saying the difference between having a person there who is nonpartisan in a sense, who's just observing the process, and having that potentially really affect something is like, it just again goes to show like, oh, is the judge hungry? Did the judge have an argument with someone that day? Is the judge wanting to go on their vacation? Like, and then you add this other thing, which is like, okay, all of that is your personal life, judge. Now you have someone who's just watching you as a judge, being a judge who wants and needs nothing specific from you and is just watching the process. And the fact that that would make someone go, oh, I guess I should really do my job.
You know, this is a...
It's just like, oh God.
I have a very different experience. And I'm sure that my experience is much of an outlier compared to a lot of these. But when I was in high school, I took a criminal law class, a criminal justice class, and we went and sat in on a trial. There was about 10 of us that sat in a trial. Bob, you'll know the trial. It's the there was a murder in Plin Park where the individual set an individual's car on fire. We sat in on that trial, and they were extremely pleasant to us. There was multiple times during breaks the bailiff would come over and talk with us and ask if we had any questions that he could help us with. Granted, we were students, but you know, that was the experience that I had during a trial watching or court watching. You know, it was very, very, and I'm sure it's an outlier, but you know, it was fascinating to sit and watch that as well.
Well, what if, but doesn't it make you wonder, what if we hadn't been there? Like, you had the experience of people showing up for you and, like, wanting you to see that they were being fair or wanting you to feel like you were participating. What if you hadn't been there? Would that have gone the same way? We'll never know.
Who knows? I mean, it seemed like a pretty, Bob can speak to it more because I think Bob actually had, it was part of this trial, actually, I believe. But
this speaks to our slight age difference. Zach was sat in the trial in high school and I responded to that.
Yeah, because it was a fire.
There you go.
But I think it was pretty clear the way the trial was going and the way that it went. But yeah, I mean, you never know. Maybe it would have been a different outcome had, you know, 10 high school students not been there.
Even if the outcome would have been the same, I think there would be nuance to just kind of general demeanor.
Yeah.
If the, you know, and I don't know this and this, but, you know, if the judge is like, well, these kids are, what, you know, they're taking a class to see how this is supposed to go. I better make sure I'm doing everything right because they're here to learn from me.
Yeah.
Because there's also this element of people who work within the system where it becomes very clinical. And we've heard this discussions that's been infuriating from prosecutors that are like, look, I don't care about that person. Once I get into court, I'm here to win. So, like, even though it's like this big deal for them, it's just another day at the office. I was like, oh, I'm teaching today. So I'm going to make sure I'm doing things right. And, you know, and Susan, I just want to point out, she pointed out in the chat that, you know, what the example I used was civil, not criminal, right? But it's the same story. Like, I've been there on Monday mornings also in the audience when Monday morning is like the bail assembly line from all the people that get arrested over the weekend or for DUIs and all the stuff that happens over the weekend. And then on Monday morning, they just march them in one after another, after another, after. And so it's like, you know, family members sitting in audience with people coming in and out. And it's just, you know, I just remember sitting in one of those situations because someone I knew was in the list was coming through. And it was just like, God, like, how can he be such a jerk to everyone? And it's like the judge to me felt like he's looking like all of you are criminals. I'm like, you don't know if they're, none of them have been convicted of anything, but everybody that walked in there was like, sit down, shut up. This is what you got next. You sit down, shut up. And it's like the same public defender with a stack of cases this big that they probably just got handed to them a half hour ago, trying their best to like make that bail argument when, you know, they have no idea what's going on. They can't possibly go through all that. It's just, yeah, it's a terrible situation.
And I'm sure that there are people, you know, we don't have somebody who works on that side of things being able to like give their voice in this situation, but I'm sure, you know, somebody who's doing that, like whether this is empirically true or not, I'm sure they're like, guys, most of the time these people are criminals, most of the time these people have done really bad things, or most of the time, you know, like you're looking for the outlier, and I'm telling you that every day of my job it's mostly guilty people going through the system. It's not the best system in the world, but it's the best one the world has. And you know what I'm saying? Like, I get, you know, just the sort of like day in, day out desensitization, or like that you give the same reasoning as a doctor gives, which is like, well, I have to compartmentalize to be able to do my job.
Yeah.
My job is to, you know, save this person. Well, my job is to keep the wheels of justice moving, so to speak.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And they kind of lose track of the individual people. Like, I get how it happens.
Or people are like, you know, the worst of humanity. I see the very worst people do.
Yeah.
And it's hard not to have that lens over everything after a while, maybe.
Well, and what becomes frustrating too is that feeling of most of these people are guilty. It's like everything is a self-fulfilling prophecy. Like, we have a system that's designed to create convictions.
Sure.
You know, like I said, when you look at, you know, over, I think the number last time I looked when I was in one of my classes, I had to do some research on it, was something like 97% of cases end at the state level end in a plea deal, which that means 90, that means every single one of those is guilty.
Right.
Right. They pled guilty. Now, that maybe they were charged with, you know, some, you know, horrible offense and they plead it down to like, well, we'll just let you, if you just plead a misdemeanor, then we'll just give you probation and you can go. And they take that because they don't want to face 5 years in prison for something. But it just becomes a self-fulfilling prophecy because the way the system's designed to work, almost all people who get arrested are going to end up pleading guilty. And so because they do that, the system can then look back and say,
we did it.
97% of the people we arrest are guilty.
Right.
Look at the stats.
Right.
Almost nobody that we arrest is innocent, because the only people that are innocent who get arrested are the people that break through, refuse to be one of that 97 or 98% that plead guilty, go to trial, and then they're of the 10% or less of people that go to a trial and get past that bias and somehow get acquitted. I mean, it's a fraction of people that get arrested that are on paper innocent. And I don't mean overwhelming majority, 60%. I mean overwhelming majority, 99% of the time when someone gets arrested, they get convicted.
Right.
One way or another.
Yeah.
And then the system is able to lean on that stat and say, we get it right 99% of the time.
Yeah. Mm. Yeah. No, I mean, and to Susan's point, who says yes, but pre-trial is pre-trial. Innocence must be the assumption in every decision, yet it rarely is. Yeah. I mean, what Bob just described, like the idea of like marching in just a bunch of people who were arrested over the weekend, the idea that anyone in that courtroom, if they're being honest, is doing a clear intellectual reset every single time a new person is put in front of them and is like, well, I'm looking at this new person with fresh eyes and my fresh eyes are telling me this person is innocent until proven guilty. I don't know. Nobody believes that. Like, even the people who think the system works perfectly, they don't believe that. You know, like, I refuse to believe that anyone thinks that, like, you are giving a clean slate every single person who's put in front of you when you're just on the docket like that, you know?
When you have 50 people that were arrested over the weekend for DUI and all 50 get set the exact same bail amount, do we believe that all 50 of those people had the exact same circumstances, exact same level of probable cause against them?
Don't have time. Got to move through. Got to move them through.
Got to move them.
Yeah. Well, it was a really provocative episode in that I think, it really brought up a new thing that many people that thought that they were, you know, familiar, including us, thought that they were, you know, had some familiarity with the way the system works, and finding out that there are organizations like this. And, you know, hopefully just having had that conversation, A, has clearly stirred up some more questions and some conflict and some hard things to have to look at and hopefully address, and also like make a difference and get some more bodies out there sitting in those courts and paying attention and holding people accountable, even in those small ways.
Yeah, best we can do is be the watchers on the wall and try to, you know, as I always said, the outsiders are going to make the difference. So if you're in a position where you're able to spend some time watching and also, you know, or even contributing or donating to some of these bail funds to help with that, we didn't talk much about that, but that's a huge thing that you can do. But let's continue to be involved and continue to work hard to make a difference. And with that, we're going to wrap this up. I'll let you guys know on Sunday. I mentioned earlier, I'm interviewing Amy from the Case by Case YouTube channel. We're talking about a case you may not be, most people, or most, it's not a huge case in the zeitgeist, but the case has a weird tie-in to the Delphi case also, which we touch on that a little bit. So it was, you know, I didn't go into this conversation in this interview to talk Delphi, and we don't do it a whole lot, but there is an interesting tie-in. The one of the people convicted in this case supposedly is the one that everybody thought was the change of direction press conference where they put out the Young sketch.
Wow, interesting.
That, you know, most people immediately said, oh, that's him from the same area, everything. So there's some weird connections there. Super interesting conversation. So make sure you check that out on Sunday. And remember, next week for the follow-up, pay attention to social media, because I will 99.9% sure be traveling next week. We will do a follow-up, just not exactly sure when or how. And until then, we'll talk to you next week. Bye, guys.
See you, everybody.
Bye, guys.
Truth and Justice is an NBI Studios production, co-written and produced by Erica Bergenham. Music created and composed by Caden Ladislaw. Follow-up episodes are co-hosted by Janet Varney and Zach Weaver. Our logo font was created by Tate Krupa of Red Swan Graphic Design. Our website is created, managed, and maintained by Katie Ross of createdintandem.com. Thank you to our volunteer transcription team, Erica Cantor, Kathy McElhaney, Courtney Wimberly, Kaywood Yomnick, Danielle Rohr, Jennifer Athey, and Caroline Dwyer. Truth and Justice provides all investigative and advocacy work for the wrongfully convicted completely free of charge. We're able to do that in large part thanks to you, our listeners, through your generous pledges on Patreon. Patreon accounts for the overwhelming majority of our funding. The number one way you can support our work is to become a patron at patreon.com/truthandjustice. For just $5 a month, you'll get all episodes ad-free, a bonus pregame episode every Wednesday, and also a video version of the Friday follow-ups exclusive to our patrons. Patrons also get to participate and join the chat live in many of our interviews and get early access to much of our content. Just go to patreon.com/truthandjustice to sign up. You can also help us out by going to iTunes and leaving us a 5-star rating and review. It doesn't cost you a penny and goes a long way towards making the show more visible. If you have a new case that you'd like us to consider, you can submit your cases on our website, truthandjusticepod.com. Just click on the case submission button and fill out the form. You can always keep in touch with us through our email at theories@truthandjusticepod.com. You can like our Facebook page or join in on the conversation on the official Truth and Justice Podcast fans page. You can also connect with us on social media platform X at Truth Justice Pod. And to follow our personal accounts on social media, I can be found at Bob Ruff Truth. Janet can be found at Janet Varney. And Zach is at Z to the Q. However you do it, stay engaged and stay in touch. But as for now, we're signing off. I'm Bob Ruff.
I'm Zach Weaver.
And I'm Janet Varney.
And this has been Truth and Justice.
Identity theft can cost more than you think. Drained investment accounts, stolen tax returns, lost wages, expenses for lawyers. It's a lot. That's why LifeLock is backed by the $1 Million Protection Package, which covers up to $1 million each for stolen funds, fees for experts and lawyers, and out-of-pocket expenses. Don't face the burden of identity theft alone. Protect your future and finances with LifeLock. Join now and save up to 30% your first year at LifeLock.com/iHeart. Terms apply.
It's called soccer.
It's called football.
Soccer.
Football.
Domino's Best Deal Ever lets you get any pizza, including stuffed crust, with any toppings for $9.99.
Okay, we can agree on that.
Yeah, fully.
So, pineapple? Don't ruin it. Get any pizza, including stuffed crust, with any toppings for $9.99. Finally, something everyone can get behind.
And if the rest disagree, that's between them and Domino's. Which means the only thing left to fight over is who's ordering.
Domino's.
Prices higher for some locations. Excludes XL and specialty pizzas. Select this offer from 6:15 to 7:26. Online only. Size availability varies by crust type. Max 7 toppings. 6 for pan and New York style crust. Minimum purchase required for delivery. Prices, participation, delivery area, and charges may vary.
Hey, it's Ryan Seacrest here, and if you're looking for some serious fun, head over to ChumbaCasino.com. At Chumba Casino, you can play all your favorite social casino-style games for free anytime, anywhere. It's the most fun you can have on your phone or computer.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 21+.